reaction on this topic. And I think we have a caller on the line. We want to go ahead and bring a caller into the folds of this conversation. Caller, give me just a moment and we'll get you on the air. Caller, are you there?
Good morning.
All right. Well, we're going to come back to that caller in just a moment.
And we'll give the number for everyone else that doesn't have the number, perhaps.
Yes. Go ahead, Tina.
Okay. 813-239-9663. Again, 813-239-9663.
And while we, you know, accept our calls coming in, what I want to go ahead and do, and since Val gave a great segue into part of the show that we want to talk about, which is the responsibility and accountability of men and women when it comes to this discussion, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play a clip by Gabrielle Union. We played a clip by her last week, and this touches on that point. Go ahead, Sam.
There was an audition that I went on years ago where it said you had to come in coochie cutters. These are exact words.
The shorts.
Like short shorts. But it said coochie cutters and tank tops. And there was the house was up off of Mulholland Drive in L.A., a very windy road, and there was no parking. So, like, all these women, there was literally 30, 40 women auditioning for one role. And it was like a cattle call. It was so demoralizing, but you want the job. You want the opportunity. You think this job is going to be the one that changes my life. So the situations and the sexism that you tolerate hoping for an opportunity.
Wow.
Because it's embarrassing to think, was I that thirsty for a job? Was I that so hungry? Was my ambition so great that I suspended common sense and my self-worth for an opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
For the hope.
But
the fact that I was willing to wait in line in the extreme heat for hours for the hope of exploiting myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we're conditioned to think is reasonable.
Uh-huh.
Women do whatever you need to do to get chosen, to be seen, to be shown as you are a standard of beauty because you've been chosen for a music video by a popular artist. I wanted that.
Yeah,
you know. But that's, you know, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
To admit now, as I'll be 45 in 2 weeks, that I was so, my self-esteem was so deficient that I allowed so much in my career and in my life, and it never occurred to me to stand up for myself.
Wow. That was definitely revealing, mm-hmm. You know, and I appreciate
and a lot
honesty.
Of truth in that.
Red team time.
And that's fine. And again, that's the conversation we need to have. Jamal will have to explain red team when we come to him. But one thing I want to point out is that Gabrielle Union, I believe she's 45 now.
Yeah.
And I believe she said that it was 10 years ago. So when we talk about maturity level and things of that nature and knowing, you know, because I'm trying to remember when she was in, what, Bring It On, you know, and however long ago that was and, you know, her journey and so forth. And how at the men point, you know, that's my age coming up, you know, how she was still faced with those type of decisions. So it's very interesting. And you know, as you know, I know you all have some comments about it, and I'm gonna go ahead and start with Jamal. If you actually start with explaining what red team is.
All right, red team means, like you just say, you know what, I'm going the other way on this topic, I'm going in. Yeah. And that just means, like, look, I disagree with what they're saying, or I'm going to put an argument out there for you to think about this. One thing about Hollywood, DT's not here. Hope he can come back in. But
he's listening.
DT has a history of directing music videos. You're creating a fantasy. People are actors or actresses. If you have a role and they ask you to show up some way, you're acting for that part. So I didn't see anything where she was sexualized from a sexual stalk standpoint. Mm-hmm. She was sexualized from a visual standpoint, but they told you that before you went to the thing. Like, certain actresses or certain singers, like, you're not going to hear a Celine Dion or Whitney Houston sing a certain type of song. You're not going to hear a certain actress play a certain kind of role. Like, if you have Halle Berry when she had, like, her sexual situation in Monster Ball.
Yeah.
You may not get another, I'm thinking, I won't say classy because Halle's classy, but certain actors are not going to play that kind of role at all. So that's on you. It's like any woman that goes to a hip-hop, you're going to a hip-hop music video set. Look at the lyrics. Look at the title of the song. So what do you mean you felt a certain way? because they had you act a certain way. Now, if they're doing that creepy touch or they're approaching you a certain way sexually, that's different. But the fact that you're in this role and they're asking you to act this part, there's nothing wrong with that. That's
and
what you
I think,
signed up for.
Yeah, and I think it's probably double fold because I think that was one of her entities as far as explaining, but I also think it was a reality check for her as a woman.
Right.
So much of what she stated as far as like what she had to wear, the attire, the coochie cutters, and you know, you seen these, she's seen these, this long line of women just waiting in line for an opportunity. So it was kind of like, yeah, okay, you come in for the video, you kind of know what you're coming for and that whole thing. But again, it was just a way, I think, for her to say, dag, look how desperate I am, or how you guys say, look how thirsty I am, you know? And she was looking at it from that perspective as well. So I don't think it was too much of a point in the finger at, you know, the guys, so to speak.
Dr. Marquita?
Well, you know, and I hear what you're saying, Jamal, and thanks for red teaming. I guess the point there, though, is that we sometimes act in unconscious ways that we're not particularly proud of when we go back and reflect upon that, and so we look at our culture and say, you know, what about our culture led me to think that that was a good way to present myself? And again, back to that culture, it's insidious. It's not always just you know, black and white, but where are we as a society that we've got all these women lined up in short shorts, and you know, and so to then once she became matured and became
and
more
aware.
Woke and aware, and you know, then she can go back and kind of say, "Hey, I was part of a." I'm not going to necessarily call it a rape culture, but a culture that devalued and degraded women, and I'm not proud of the fact that I stood in that line.
Right, so she helped plant the tree, so to speak.
But what about women who would say, and I'm just, it's out there, people are saying, well, yeah, but I've empowered myself. I've chosen to do this, so no one has that power over me. Could you address that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that we see that in the use of the N-word, right? Where we take the word and culturally reappropriate it to mean something good and different in the context of a word that had been used against us. So there's absolutely people who come from it from that perspective that I'm owning my own sexuality, and therefore, because I'm choosing to do it this way, I still think, in my opinion, you know, that there is sort of more unconscious forces that are at play from a societal perspective that lead people to think that way. If someone feels that they're empowering themselves by doing that, by degrading themselves, so be it. But it's hard for me to kind of rationalize that.
Yeah, and I know we haven't really talked about this, but the adult entertainment industry and especially X-rated movies, the average duration of an actress, at least, that gets in is 6 months. So that empowerment, that owning your sexuality, to having, you know, hegemony over your own sexuality, will only last 6 months on average.
Right. Interesting.
It's a very interesting topic. And again, we were talking about different industries itself. You've gone from the adult industry to, you know, the entertainment industry. We've talked about the corporate industry, and that's currently my industry, and along with some other, you know, members of the crew here today. And I wanted to kind of touch back on that, on you know, the workplace concerns and what we believe are deemed to be appropriate behavior or misbehavior. So does anybody want to start that off?
Yeah, I want to start off just with some statistics. There was a poll from ABC News, Washington Post. It's from October 2017, and it found that about 54% of women said they had in life had experienced unwanted and inappropriate sexual advances at some point. And this is kind of really where it gets kind of disturbing, because 30% of the women said that they experienced these advances at work, and 25% identified the situations with men with the sway over their careers, pretty much men who were you know, a position of power, whether it be their supervisor or boss. And nearly all these women, 95% reported that the male perpetrators usually went unpunished. And what I feel like with this situation, especially at the workplace, because you go to a nightclub, you go to a strip club, you know, you're in a situation where it may be more appropriate. People are there, they know, they're more expecting at least to be possibly approached in a sexual manner. But at the workplace, when you come to work, you're there to work. You're there to get a job done, get paid, be a professional. And I think similar to how we had these different bubbles, whether it be like the internet bubble or the dot-com, things like that, the housing mortgage bubble, I think it, the bubble just burst on men acting up, especially at work. Because, I mean, if you got one every four women has this going on with your boss, I mean, you can't even operate.
Well, that's a power dynamic. What about the dynamic at work? We know there's a lot of internet dating. There's a lot of office dating, inner office dating. There is. And you end up,
yeah,
end up meeting
there is.
But in order to get that first date, generally, a man, if we're talking about a heterosexual relationship, the man will go and he'll approach the woman. Now, if he gets rebuffed, you know, I don't have time now, I'm not into it, and he continues just trying to get a date, flirting, trying to get that date, right? At what point does that become sexual harassment?
Well, if I can, Sam, I think this is perfect timing that I actually speak on my personal experience when it comes to sexual harassment, assault, and an individual creating a hostile work environment for me. As you mentioned and you brought up dating, you know, I had this particular coworker where it was considered a cute mate. So this person sat directly next to me. And probably the distance away, maybe a foot to a foot and a half. So you have your two computers and then you're doing your work. And this particular person was rebuffed by me. There were some more than one advance made in conversation to try to have me, you know, meet him outside of work. And certain talk would be inappropriate, you know, and I would have to say, you know, hey, fall back on that or what have you. And this particular time, this person came in and began what to be seemingly an innocent, appropriate conversation, basically. And that, to me, that was the pull-in. You know, I'm going to start off, you know, appropriate. And what actually happened is that this person began to speak to me. And, Joe, I want you to focus on DT. DT is going to represent, I'm all about the visual today because I think it takes more than just talking about a subject. And you need to be able to see. Men are visual. So even though this happened to me, I am comfortable in this room full of people. And I'm going to reenact my experience. So DT is playing a role of approximately 6'4", 300 plus man.
Wow.
That sat next to me.
We can tell this is still radio when DT is 6'4".
So he's about to stand on the stool right now with his uncomfortable knees. So, you know, the person began the conversation and it began to become inappropriate. So I used my body language and I shifted away from him totally to my computer and I began working, ignoring him. This person began to continue to talk and began to talk salaciously and using body language and looking at me a certain way. So I, you know, at my computer, and this person is now facing me, and this person says something very inappropriate, sexually inappropriate, and he grabs me and like this very hard, and I had to kind of break free of him. And I had to tell this person, do not touch me, you know, and I had to have that conversation with this person, you know, do not touch me, you know, that actually hurt. You know, if you can imagine somebody of that stature grabbing you with full force, you know, and yeah, this person was bold enough to do that in our cubicle. So there has to be an understanding that there are people out there that will make bold movements against you. And, you know, you think that you may be in a safe environment. However, you know, they act very differently from that. So that's why I feel like, you know, at all points, you know, you need to be prepared for inappropriate behavior. In this case with me, you know, I had to, you know, determine how I would react. And I have to say, you know, we have to give an understanding. There has to be grace, and we have to give an understanding of people that may not immediately report these sexual misconducts because they may be in certain situations where they feel that they're not going to be in an advantageous position to do so. And that actually was my experience. I was a temporary person that basically was not a permanent employee of this company. And I could be, if I reported this person in this incident, I would be looked at as the troublemaker, which many times that may happen. And that's something that, even though that may happen, we still have to stand tall. You know, and what ended up happening and what I realized and what I learned through this situation is that if a person is is willing to do that to you, they're not going to stop. They're going to continue. And that's what happened. And that's what created the hostile work environment. This person began to speak negatively about me to my TL, to my team lead, to other coworkers. So it began that type of dynamic, you know, where it created a hostile work environment, and to where it got to a point to where I had to report it at that point. You know, enough is enough, as to say. And, you know, I also want to address the fact that management, and Dr. Marquita Wills mentioned this before, as far as when it comes to human resource, they're not necessarily on your the complainant behalf. You know, they're looking out for the company. And when I reported it initially to my supervisor, I felt like that group of people sat on their hands. So when I saw nothing was being done and then this person's behavior was continuing, I escalated to the human resource department. And then that's when something happened. And sometimes you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to go above and beyond, in a sense, or above the normal chain of command when they're not reacting in the proper way that they should be reacting. And I want to also say this, too. Do not be fooled by thinking that because of a person is of a certain gender, whether it be your team lead or your manager, what have you, that you're automatically going to get some type of support. Because I have found that women can be, you know, the worst supporters in this situation. Ooh. And I think that's something to address, too. And, you know, I know myself, but I want to also mention the initiative that's out there now, where supporting women that are reporting these allegations and reporting these incidents, and they're supporting them financially. And see, that was my concern, why I didn't speak up initially and immediately, is my living, you know, and how I can just be let go. We're in an at-will state. So there's an initiative out there, and I'm going to speak to that later on in the show, but that is helping women financially, I think even with legal situations, as far as to fight these type of incidents that happen. And Colonel Brown, you want to make a comment?
Yeah. First of all, thank you,
impactful,
for,
yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Very important and impactful.
Transparency is excellent. So we always need that. You know what I mean, God dang it. I had a rough night.
Good night.
As I sit here and listen to you, to elaborate on what you already said, there's something I want to bring to people's attention, and I hear it as you speak. A lot of people don't understand that when you're a rape victim or sexually harassed as a victim, it creates trauma. Mm-hmm. And that trauma doesn't necessarily happen at that particular time. That trauma can come days, hours, days, weeks, months, a year later, because sometimes the trauma kicks in when you realize what happened. Because a lot of people, when they're assaulted or they're being raped, they try to remove their self. They try to take their self out of their body. That's how they survive.
Right.
I've been going to shelters. I've did cases with rape victims and went through counselings. And so they remove their self from their physical body. And then later on, that trauma reoccurs, that trauma comes back. Again, as I sit here and listen to people understand that trauma can lead to other disabilities. Trauma leads to death, stress, suicides. One of the things I learned when you're dealing with rape victims is that, depending on what it is, when you come on the scene or you're dealing with that person, we have to ask information to try to help the person. A lot of people will see that, why is he talking to them like that? Why are they asking the questions? Go get this, you know, SOB and so forth. But we're trying to get information, because if I come on the scene and you're a woman, what if I look like the person that assaulted you? So what we try normally do is we try to bring another female on. You have a rape counselor, you call a rape crisis center. Mm-hmm. You try to bring someone that they can relate to better. But also, like when you talk about male rape, you know, women get raped and male gets raped also. I had a situation where a male got raped and he didn't want to talk to me, because one thing, men don't like to report rape. Men get raped. A lot of times it goes unreported. But, and I can say this, as a man, when we get sick or we have something that happens to us, we revert back to little boys. Mm. So as I was talking to this male rape victim, I was trying to get information, and I was trying to find out who his mom was, who his sister was, because, like as I said before, when we get sick, we want our moms. We want that person who nurtured us. And then once that person came on the scene, they gave us the information that we need to help catch the culprit. And the reason I was bringing that up, because a lot of people, you know, I want to go over a couple things.
Of course.
Let people understand what some of the things that entail in a rape kit, which is a forensic kit, that people get examined with after the rape has occurred. First and foremost, we have to have a consent form signed. People think when there's a crime committed such as rape that law enforcement can come right in and they can just do whatever they want to get it done. No, if you're raped and you're sitting there bleeding and your clothes are torn off, that of course we're going to do medical procedures, get you medical help to make sure that you're taken care of. But if you don't give us consent, you can't do the rape kit. A lot of people think that we, and I'm not going to go into everything on the kit, because you might have some coward or some sick pervert out there that's listening. I want him to try to figure out how to counter what I'm about to tell you. You know, so I'm just letting you know, because I know you're out there listening. I know some sickos out there listening. I don't care. See me.
That's why I trained under him, because he had the same mindset.
I know. Yeah. Y'all do have to.
Yes. I have a. Go ahead, Colonel Brown.
Okay. One of the things is that depending on your culture and your religion, some of the process of the rape kit cannot be conducted. Some cultures, if you're raped, you lose your position as a woman, and you cannot receive your status of queen or princess or the family inheritance. Mm-hmm. So they won't report it. Some cultures won't let a woman disrobe and see the nudity of her body unless it's by her husband. So these are just some of the things that we go through or have to deal with when a sexual battery or a rape is being committed. It's not like you see on TV, they go in there and she's doing all this. You know, she's already undressed. And there's a lot of things that go into it. But what is good is that the people in the crisis center and the people who come help the women and counsel stuff, they're awesome. And they'll also tell law enforcement what they can and what they can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we're ran out of the room. We can't even be in there.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will tell you, though, if you ever have that happen to you, see, women, I'm going to put you in the mindset of a victim. We tell you it's hard to tell a person, don't wash your mouth out, don't take a bath, don't take your clothes, because you have been so defiled and been so disgusted that you want to take this stuff off. But if you get in that situation, try to understand that we need you to wait till we get there so we can get evidence off the body, you know, so that we can help catch this person. Because once we get that DNA, we have a lot. One of the things that I would like people to start paying attention to is, like, we start seeing guys, most of these guys out there who are perverts, they do stuff like they'll shave their head, they'll shave their eyebrows, they won't have any facial hairs. They get laser surgery on their pubic hairs. You know, only models, movie stars, and different things like that. But when you start seeing people like that, they'll wear gloves. Some of them even wear false eyelashes so that if something does fall off, it won't be their eyelashes, it'll be something else. So these are little things that you can observe on a person, and you'd be amazed when the people around you that have these type of tendencies. That's why I don't let certain people around me, and that includes family members.
I understand.
You know, I'm gonna say, like, and if they're listening, I don't care, because they know how I roll. But if they ever wonder why I have my children around them, now you know why.
Now you know.
Because I'm doing you a favor.
I'm sorry. Mm-mm. So,
I have a question.
Val,
what are the statute of limitations on rape? Like, if a woman gets raped, or man?
In the state of Florida, there's no statute of limitations.
So 10 years after the alleged act, someone can come and
report a rape that happened 10 years ago?
Right. The hard part about it is not reporting, it's about proving it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because in some questions that are answered to bring this case forward, it would seem like that you're trying to insult the victim, but you're trying to get information so you can get this evidence to bring that case
right.
forward.
And I believe that it would be harder if it's 10 years, you know, down the line. So that's why it's always encouraged for the victim to come forward as soon as possible. Is that correct?
Right, but if we can get the clothes, if we can get the clothes, the DNA, semen and blood and so forth, it stays in the clothes. That's why your Monica Lewinsky was able to get that money from the taxpayers when she gave your boy a little whooping in court, because she kept the dress for 3 years and they had his stuff on it.
Right.
That we had to pay her for it, which she discussed me. But anyway, so that evidence, those clothing and stuff, that is very important.
And I appreciate you touching on that point about the evidence, because many times in the corporate place, or you know, in industries, when you report to your human resource department, you're making a serious allegation, a serious claim. However, and this comes to kind of the banter that even the crew members have, as far as, you know, these women are making these allegations and these guys are just being let go. You know, we don't know the inner workings of these companies and what due diligence they have and what policies they have before they let a person go, because what we have to remember is that you can sue somebody for anything. And so they want to cover themselves in such a way, at least good enough, minimally, to make sure that this person that they're letting go possibly doesn't have the grounds to come back to say that you fired me, you know, egregiously or what have you, you know, without proper cause, I should say. So I wanted to go back and touch on that. And Sam has a good follow-up question.
Well, yeah, I'm even more pessimistic. I see, and especially in corporations or anything that has a governing body, either management or however you want to call it, ultimately they're paid, right, by the company. And the company has, especially if you're talking about a corporation, it's invested in staying alive and making more profit.
Right.
We're going to talk about it later, but also right. in like college situations, right?
Right. Because what you see at workplaces, like especially...
But my point was the HR department is paid for by the organization and not paid for by the people that are working for it. So they have a more inherent responsibility to the company than they do the employees.
Right, because if you sue the company for sexual, you're not going to sue the individual who sexually assaulted you for sexual assault. You're going to sue the company in what the theory called respondeat superior. The company was employing someone in this role and they were aware of that. So you're going to try to get to the company because that's how you would get compensated.
Don't you include the assailant into the lawsuit?
Yeah, you include the assailant, but I'm saying unless the assailant doesn't have any money, I mean, you can't get nothing from the assailant.
Yeah, but you make sure they're broke.
Right, right. And so before we go to a break, I definitely want to bring in one of our callers on the line. Zeb, good morning.
Good morning, Zeb.
Yeah, good morning.
Thank you for hanging on for us. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. I wanted to say something. I used to work in corporate America a long, long time ago. And at that time, you didn't have very many women in upper management. But it seemed like whoever was in charge of HR was almost always a woman. And I knew three different women who had an experience where they were sexually harassed by a male supervisor or manager. And when they went to HR, they got absolutely no sympathy from the woman who was in HR. And then later on found out that the reason that woman got the job in HR was because she had actually submitted to sexual advances from a superior. So see, this is where you start running into institutionalized sexual harassment, where you're not just up against an individual, you're up against a system. Harvey Weinstein had a whole network of people around him to protect him. And when you're working for a company and the upper ups are in on this type of behavior, you can guarantee whoever they got in HR is looking to protect them and not the victim.
Well, thank you, Zab. We appreciate that. Always, always good remarks. And we're actually going to go ahead and go into a break. And then on the other side, we're going to come back and we're going to discuss college, family, and we're going to wrap it up. So you're tuning in to the Urban Cafe WMNF 88.5. Take us out.
Plug your ears.
Why?
Because of this.
But keep your ears open for brand new episodes of Patch and Click, the award-winning sci-fi radio serial, rebooted starting January 15th. New 4-minute episodes repeating 4 times weekly. Monday, 2:30 p.m., Tuesday, 2 a.m., Thursday, 7:55 p.m., and Saturday, 10:30 a.m. Exciting cutting-edge sci-fi comedy adventure only on 88.5 WMNF Tampa.
The Tampa Bay Black Heritage Festival presents the 18th annual Celebration, January 11th through the 20th. The festival includes a two-day music fest, January 13th and 14th, at Curtis Hickson Waterfront Park, downtown Tampa, featuring Stokely, formerly of Mint Condition, funk and R&B vocal group Radio, national jazz artist Norman Brown, international saxophonist BK Jackson, and Tampa native will be hosting on Sunday. This is a family event. Join the excitement January 11th through the 20th. Learn more at TampaBlackHeritage.org.
Another one. DT, Happy New Year from all of us at WMNF. We are happy because our amazing supporters pushed us over our goal for the end of the year. That should also make you happy. Thanks again for all that you do for your station.
Great. That is awesome, awesome, awesome. All right. So we are back, the Urban Cafe, and we are all the way up on Facebook Live. I have Val Trenta that's holding it down. So we're going to get ready to go to Facebook Live to see what the comments are.
Right. I pose a lot of questions to a lot of people. But before we do that, I want to give certain shout outs to a lot of people who are on live. We have Rhoda James, who's on, Bernie Smith, who's on, Esther Dillard.
Skip I said hello.
Tell Skip we said hello.
Yeah. Skip's one of the biggest program directors in the country, and Esther is his wife, and she used to be one of the reporters at the station in Buffalo.
So we want to give a special shout out to her. Yeah. Special shout out to Esther. Deanna Rucker Parks is online. Lisa Thompson Holloway and JJ Brown. There's a lot more people who are online. But I posed a question to Carrie. Carrie, I posed a question to Facebook about do you believe that there what are the statute of limitations are for a reporting rape? And Carrie believes that there should be no time limit. So I said, do you believe that the perp should be punished even 20 to 30 years after the alleged act? She said, yes, it was a crime. It doesn't disappear after time.
Mm. Right. But the proof of the crime could, correct?
You know, I always, you know, am a little skeptical when it comes down to the time that people, I feel that it's very odd. I understand what Colonel Brown was saying earlier about time and how a lot of times people don't realize what happened to them for weeks after or a month after or years, a year or so after. But I do have a little kink in, you know, about 10 years after an act and you just now want to report something. I kind of question what's your motive behind that, especially those who are in Hollywood, because to me, if you waited 10 years, you didn't just realize that you were raped 10 years after the rape. Maybe something provoked you or reminded you or triggered you.
Could you also talk to about secondary memories?
Sure. So I think going back to Colonel Brown's earlier point about dissociating, there absolutely is where you go outside of your body to just cope with the fact that you've gone through such a traumatic experience. But then there's also a lot of shame and guilt and concern and worry. And you don't necessarily always get the level of support from your environment that you think you should. A lot of times people go into victim blaming mode. Well, what were you doing? Well, and who wants to have to sit there and go through all of that when they're trying to prove their point?
Right.
Now, what happens, I think, is, or what is happening, because one of my girlfriends said to me when I told her that we were doing this show, what I don't understand is why are people talking about stuff that happened to them 30 years ago? Which is a good question, right? And I think it's kind of what you're getting at. Why are people feeling a need? I think that society has shifted so that what felt like a violation to them before and they weren't able to give voice to, now we're at a cultural moment where finally we can say, you know what? darn it, that happened to me too. And whereas before, they didn't have the support, they didn't have the camaraderie, they didn't have the safety, psychological safety, they didn't have all of those elements, now it feels like I can finally come out. Because what I think people who, where it hasn't happened to them, don't realize is that these women have long-lasting lifetime effects
right.
to these occurrences right. that happen to them.
But what about the ones who, and I get what you're saying.
And that comes up 20 and 20, 30 years later.
Absolutely.
It's still real.
Absolutely. And I understand that women should, or women who, or whoever, you know, but women are the prime majority who are rape victims. But men or women who are dealing with issues that, you know, a rape happened 10 or 20 years ago, coming out and saying, yes, that happened to me, is different from saying, yes, that happened to me, now go get him. You know, I think that that's different. I don't think that. And I'm not saying that no one should do that. I think that they should. But I think I just question the motive behind 10 or 20 years later. Why are you coming out and trying to now, you know, get that person arrested or whatever for that action? I just question the motive. I'm not saying
right,
there's anything
yeah.
wrong with it. I just question the motive.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Hold on, Jamal, because I've gone through rape. Mm-hmm. I've experienced it, and going back to what Dr. Wills was saying is that when you don't have an outlet or you don't have someone to go to and just believe you, just take it as belief, you hold that in until now. Like, I still hold that in, and what I have carried with me all the way up to 47 now. If you blame me for something and I didn't do it, I'm enraged. Like, I will cut your limbs. You know,
but what would be your motive if you said, okay, I get what you're saying,
uh-huh.
but now you're saying, okay, the difference would be now I need to report it now. I need to report
well,
it.
Well, it's not even about the report so much. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, it's not so much the report part, but one thing that I would say is that, like, the man that raped me is still hanging out around my family and go to parties, and it's like, now it's like, you know what, now I have a platform where I can say, you know what, y'all go do something about
it's
that. Y'all knew that happened.
Victimizing. He didn't
you
start
know,
with
y'all
you.
Know that, you know?
I guess my question to you back is, what would be the most nefarious motive that you can think of? Like, what would be the worst motive, and what's wrong with that motive?
Well,
What motive are you thinking of?
Right, my motive to me, and I'm talking about in Hollywood and mm-hmm. and a lot of things like that, would be monetarily. A lot of people go,
oh, that's not it.
I'm just saying, she asked me. I'm just saying that I don't know what their motive is.
Okay.
That's what I said. I question. I would question the motive. Hold on, Jamal. We gonna get to you, baby. Great day. I just say I question. I'm not saying that there's anything. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with it. All I'm saying is I question people's motive for 10 years down the line, what happens after, you know?
And I'm okay. And I guess the reason why I don't question that is because I'm okay if they get that money 10, 15, yeah. 20 years later, because if there were damages that were done, so be
exactly
it.
Exactly what you were talking
about. The motive is not money. How they have billions of dollars. The money, the whole point, the motive is a cultural change, so this doesn't happen anymore, so it's all on the table. Yeah. That's the big picture.
Right.
And DT?
I just want to share
finally.
My Me Too moment.
DT?
You were raped, DT?
Yes.
Aww.
When I was 6, babysitters.
Yeah.
And I say this to the women who have busy lives and they depend on babysitters sometimes. Be careful, because my mother was in the bowling. She was a professional bowler, and she had people who would watch over us while she went bowling when we came home from school. And it was these young ladies who lived across the street that my mother trusted their family, but when I was about 6 years old, I remember the young lady telling me to come into the room and just instructing me on what to do. I didn't know what, I was just following orders, you know. But because of that, you know, I think at age 6, being introduced to that activity may have played a role in how I was able to develop relationships with women after the fact, because now sex was on the brain, you know, where maybe at 6, that's not normally the case. And so I know men don't want to, you know, a lot of men are not coming out to say it, but I'm saying this to women who sometimes bring people in to watch over their kids when they're gone, that sometimes that's a place where the pedophiles take advantage of situations.
That is. And Sam has a burning question, but Sam, I'm going to have to hold you off because we want to move this along, and if we have time, we'll revisit it. Respect. All right, so again, we wanted to go ahead and shift things, the conversation. So I want to bring up college, as far as campus rape and, you know, the prevalence of it happened there in that arena as well. And I wanted to start off by giving a couple of stats, and I'm going to go to Jamal because he has some great stats also. I get my stats from rain.org, and it says, among graduate and professional students, 8.8% of females and 2.2% of males experience rape or sexual assault through physical force, violence, or incapitation. More than 50% of college sexual assaults occur in either August, September, October, or November. Students are at an increased risk during the first few months of their first and second semesters in college. And I just want to point out here, this reminds me of just being in elementary and middle school and going into high school, where you're freshman and you're fresh meat. And I'm sure some of us have heard that saying before, and where you're targeted. and I want to go ahead and throw it to Jamal. What's your great stat?
Well, the Bureau of Justice Statistics stated that according to their study, as many as 1 in 4 women experience sexual assault at college. However, the vast majority never report it. And I just wanted to throw in there, based on my college experience, one thing you have that's different from a lot of places you have, I mean, most schools, 20, 30, 40,000 people, the same age, 4 or 5 years, give or take. And you have alcohol involved in a lot of these situations. And not only that, you have a lot of people who are drinking alcohol and access for the first time. So you can just imagine, it's just like a perfect recipe for disaster when it comes to sexual assault.
And I did want to mention another stat, as far as it says, among undergraduate students, 23.1% of females and 5.4% of males also experience rape or sexual assault through physical force, violence, or incapitation. And I just want to know if any of the guests had any comments about the college prevalence.
Can I ask, before we get to start this off, are we talking student to student or student to professor? What
I think we're talking about college, in a whole.
This actually reminds me of Val's earlier comment. I'm glad you brought alcohol up, which is, at what point do women have to take their own responsibility for being drunk and being in environments and alcohol intoxication? And I think that we've got to absolutely train our young women to know that getting drunk and being having otherwise mood-altering substances is not an appropriate thing to do in a college environment such as that. So that teaching is important, so that own accountability and personal accountability. And I do not like to victim shame or blame, and so right. I just want to be very clear about that. That is not my position. That's not what I'm stating. What I'm stating is that we all as individuals have to realize that we can go too far. Right. I think for the men, though, knowing that a woman is intoxicated and is not able to give credible consent because she's intoxicated, they've also got to be trained that is just an automatic no-no.
Right.
Period. Point blank.
And that can go into, as far as talking about like the Greek fraternities and, you know, the normalization of what the cultural norms are.
Here's Jamal.
With that. And the sororities, you know, as well. The hazing.
Not Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity.
Yeah, whatever. But a hazing could be, you know, a sorority sister go sleep with this, you know, bro or what have you, or you go, and it may not be consensual. You know, and I apologize if I cut you off, Dr. Wills, I definitely wanted to touch on that. You wanted to add any?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. We got some Facebook Live comments. Marcy Garacy. Mary Garacy. I screwed your name up. Sorry, Mary.
That person too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She says, powerful testimony from Dwayne. So we want to give him a round of applause for being you know.
Because most men wouldn't do it. They wouldn't speak about that.
Right. Thank you, Terry Crews.
Right.
So
I know that's true.
Deanna says, when something tragic happens, it's very hard to talk about. Time heals those wounds. And JJ Brown says, if they were raped, why do the victim have to have a motive? And then she also states, so if the rapist has gone Hollywood and you sue the rapist 20 to 30 years later, the victim is wrong. And that's clearly not what I was saying, JJ Brown. But and then she says also too, when we were talking about now in the college, she said drunk doesn't mean a person should be raped.
Correct.
Right.
Thank
Correct.
You.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Yeah. Thanks
thank
for
you
those
all
comments.
For, yeah. All for Facebook Live. Keep the comments coming. We have about 10 minutes left in our show.
Yes. And I want to go to a caller. And caller, I'm going to ask you if you can keep it short, maybe around 30 seconds. We have two callers on air. I'm going to get to you if we have time, because I do want to go into this family segment. Go ahead, Julia.
Hi. I just wanted to relate an experience that I had when I was in college.
I had a 4.0 average in physics. I was a part-time student, and I wanted to go full-time, so I approached the chairman of my department about scholarship money, and he invited me out on his boat to talk about it, wink, wink, nod, nod. And I dropped out of school that day. I decided, you know, that I wasn't going to take it to the institution itself, and I'm glad that I didn't, because the guy who was the dean of the department, who I would have had to take the complaint to, was busted for making obscene phone calls to his babysitter. Now, I mean, this was so institutionalized, and that's what a lot of, especially young students and things like that, are up against in the systems that they're trying to move forward in. And this had lifetime consequences for my career and everything else. I just want to know that, you know, that people know that it's not just about what immediately happens to you, but what happens down line.
Thank you so much, Julia. I really appreciate
that.
Very
poignant.
Very strong in yeah. sharing your experience. I'm sure that was going to help some people listening to you. I want to continue on the discussion, and we want to bring the family dynamic into the fold. And we have one of our callers call in and express to us, you know, with dear emotion and great emotion. Mm-hmm. So I want to play that clip, and then we'll go into a short discussion about the family influence of it.
I would just like to know, and I just like to, this is heavy on my heart, if you would ever write a book about sexual abuse amongst kids, because I found out throughout my life, and I'm 57 years old now, that I've been holding this in for so long, and I want to apologize to my little sister, Becky. I want to just apologize to you that my uncle, who was a bully, but he bullied her through sexual abuse. And throughout my life, I come to find out that most people who bully people, it seems like not only are they scared, but it seems as though they went through something through their childhood, and they weren't able to stop doing what happened to them, and they ended up passing it on. And when my sister, when she called me about 5 years ago and told me that's what happened to her from my uncle, I should have been strong enough, and I wasn't strong enough to just even admit it, because he abused me too, and I just wanted to let him know that I forgive him, and I really do forgive you people.
Wow.
Even though you're my mother's brother, and I thought you would protect us, and I didn't really know what was going on, but I just want to let you know I forgive you, and now I feel that I'm not a victim, but right now I truly feel that I'm a survivor, and I'm so glad that I called this show, that my aunt is listening to this show, and that my mother is listening to this show, and that my wife is in the other room listening to this show. And this is the first time that she's heard this has happened to me, and I want to apologize to my wife for those outbursts and for me being angry sometimes, and I always knew what it was. It was because I never got this out of my system, and I just want to thank this radio show for letting me come in here to bring this out, and I want to let my mother know, Mary, you're listening, and I want you to know that we haven't been this close because you've been too embarrassed to come to me to let me know that you're sorry for the things that you let happen to me and my little sister. And I want you to know I forgive you too, Mother. I truly forgive you, Mom. And I want you to know that we can move on, and hopefully we can be a little bit closer, because we're all getting up there in age. And I just want to thank this show again. And I just want to say, I wish you could write a book about the dangers that happen to the children. And it's usually not a stranger danger, which is what I learned, because it's not the strangers that are around us. You know, it's people inside of our households. It's people inside of our families that we trust. And it's so sad that this is laid upon our kids. And we got a lot of black kids and a lot of kids going around us carrying this burden with them.
That was...
Jarvis.
You can't help but get emotional.
Yeah, every time I hear it.
You feel
every
that.
Single time
you feel
I hear
that.
It. Every time.
And that is so, that's the aftermath. Mm-hmm. That is what someone holds in. Mm-hmm. So when you can't go to your family members, when you have no one to believe you, and most all, you don't have your mother.
Right.
That's a lot.
That's hard.
I was
yeah.
so protective of my girls growing.
Yeah.
They couldn't even spend a night out.
Right.
They
right.
didn't leave to go hang out with their friends until they were 18.
Right.
I was very protective of my girls, and that's why.
Very.
Because I was not protected.
Right.
Wow.
Oh, that's sorry. That's, I mean, it's sad, yeah, and it's unfortunate, but unfortunately, this is what we are dealing with. Yeah. And the fact that people are coming out about it and they are talking about it, it raises the awareness of what's really going on behind these closed doors. Yeah. And we talk about the workplace and we talk about, you know, college and school and all of these things that are outside of our home. But, you know, we haven't addressed the fact that sometimes these things they happen in our home, the places where we're supposed to
feel
secure,
safe,
the places where we're supposed to be feel protected. Right. And unfortunately, the children are faced with these issues. And people like Jarvis, who years later, you know, they don't have the outlet until they listen to the show and say, you know what, forget it, enough is enough. I'm talking.
Yeah. And to really just really hone in, and I'm gonna be transparent with this, is like, this happened from age 6 till I was 16. Oh. I had my first baby at 17, and I was in a coma when I had my child because of all that I was holding in, because I didn't have an outlet. And it made me ill.
Were you pregnant from your rapist?
No. And it's just, you when you holding all that stuff in, and yet you have sisters and brothers and moms and all that stuff, but no one is there to believe you. I was mute for 2 years after that. So that's why I talk so much now.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I do want to remind everyone, if you know someone who's been in this situation or anything like that, you can call your local 211. 211. I used to be a counselor there, so 211. They have the tools or trained counselors there who can talk you through. Sometimes you don't have anybody. These people believe you and they will take action.
Yes.
So is this what the paradigm shift looks like? I kind of wanted to find out, because I'm agreeing with Jamal a little bit. We're maybe in a bubble. But what does it look like after this is all sort of, the dust has settled a little bit? Have we made the paradigm shift? If the paradigm shifts that women are victims are taken seriously, that there's retribution, that there's, what's the paradigm shift?
I think it could be twofold.
Like?
It could be, of course, you were taken seriously, or it could be also that we're looking at replacing a lot of these men in their positions with women.
Mm-hmm. Or it could have a different effect, as far as maybe it would affect the hiring practice of women and where they're not hiring as often. So that could have that effect as well. I just wanted to know from our guests, do you have any last remarks you would like to make?
Last remark for me is just so grateful and thankful that we're having this conversation and dialogue, this two-part conversation and dialogue. Hats off to all of you here at the Urban Cafe for even bringing this to our community, because I think particularly in the African-American community, these kinds of conversations don't happen. So hats off to all of you.
Colonel Brown.
Thank you. I'm just looking forward to continue working to stop these types of abuses for carrying on with teen training, counseling, a platform such as this. So I'm ready to go. And anybody else want to come and join the fight, you're more than welcome.
That's right. Now, as I promised, Sam had if he still remembers, a burning question.
Well, yeah, and I'm not sure we'll get an answer. But two quick things. Firstly, what people often say is a secondary memory. Which is a false or implanted memory. And some people would say that a lot of these allegations are coming from people who've been coaxed into admitting something that maybe didn't happen or happened completely differently. And secondly, and I know we won't be able to get to this, what should we do? Should we preemptively, if we see a child acting up like animal cruelty, for instance, we usually see that as a problem about later in life, it escalates. Well, how should we preemptively take care of that? Is it going to work itself out, or do we need to start worrying about that?
Right. Those are all good questions, and we definitely want to address them, because this is not going to be the last conversation that we have on this topic. We're going to revisit it. And to wrap up the show, we definitely want to invite all to come out to the Tampa Black Heritage Festival next week. We have our hosts here, Valtrenda Caesar and Tina Marie Hollywood, that will be hosting the event.
Yay!
Yes. So we definitely want to shout out and hope you all are present there. But again, thank you for joining the discussion. I've been your host for today, Low with the Flow, and my great crew.
Excellent job.
So can we expect a part 3? I think we
oh,
almost
yeah.